Mr. Bill Bates, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Bates?
On the 7th of June 1926, at number 12, Sceptre Street, Bethnal Green.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? Sort of like?
Yes, mum and dad, five children. We had a...
What did your father do for a living?
Well, my father was out of work for quite a long time. He used to go out at 5:30 in the morning, queuing up, waiting to get jobs, either at the local borough or the Docklands. They used to throw tallies down in them days. They called them tallies. If you were lucky enough to get one, you got a day's work. If you didn't, well, you were unlucky. Best parents in the world.
Did your mother work or just stay at home?
Mum used to go cleaning schools, Palmeter School, Bethnal Green, and another one which I can't remember now. And when she came home, Dad went to work.
Were you fairly hard up, it would sound, if you were, especially when your dad didn't get work?
Yes, we were, but we never went hungry. We were hard up, and we had the minimum of everything, but we never...
What was your house like?
House was three up and two down. My aunt had the bottom half, her and her husband and five children. And there was mum and dad and us five up top. We had the top part. There was no water or facilities up there at all. We had to go downstairs into the garden, outside loo. And there was... Shared bedrooms, obviously. And if we wanted any water, we had to fetch it up in a white enamel bucket to make a cup of tea. We did have a gas stove, a small gas stove, on the landing, which Mum used to make some wonderful meals on. How she did it, I don't know, but she did.
What about your education?
Well, I went to senior school. The local school, Portman Place. I can't remember what grade it was. From there I went to a senior school, Cephas Street, in Stepney. And I was there right until I left.
How did you do at school? Was there any particular subject you liked?
Well, I did fairly well, actually. Most years I came away with a two or three prizes. In them days they gave you prizes. And one year I won 6 out of 7, so I wasn't too popular with the rest of the East End boys at the time, especially as most of us belonged to the Repton Boxing Club.
I'll come back to that. What about, so you were abroad, you were pretty good at most subjects. Did you have a favourite?
Art, yeah. I loved drawing, I loved anything with art, but the trouble was, you see, being a very tough area in the East End of London, one had to be very careful what you did for a hobby. I used to play football, cricket, and I used to box at the Repton, but art was my first subject. I loved it.
What about the sport? Football and cricket, do you play for the school or for outside?
I played for the school, and local club, only for about two or three seasons, so not very much at all.
Were you any good at football or cricket, or just average?
Well, I got asked twice. One by I don't know who he was, somebody who worked for Ipswich Town Football Club, and another one for the Orient.
Well, so you were pretty good at football.
Well, I was probably because I was tall and I played goal. So
you were a goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper, yes.
Did you carry on? Did you give up football then fairly early?
Well, the war came along. Everything was dispersed.
Okay. Now, what about the Repton Boys, the boxing club? What was that about?
Well, that was rather interesting because they made sure in the club that everything went by Queensbury rules, and despite being EastEnders and ragtag and bobtail mob, everybody looked after each other, and I enjoyed it. I didn't get too far in it because, as I say, it all came along. That put a stop to that, senior boxing. But after the war, and when I was in Singapore too, I did a bit of boxing there to earn enough money to have a few drinks.
Now, how old were you when you left school?
Well, about 13 and a half, I think. The war was coming along, they closed the schools.
Now, what about the approach of war? Were you aware of the preparations for, you know, that were being made for school children? For
by this time, Dad had got a job sinking Anderson shelters in Beck Gardens. On quite a number of occasions, I went with him to help.
Do you remember? I mean, that's always. I mean, people just talk about them as if everybody knows what they are now, but they don't know what they are now. Could you describe what they were and how you put them in?
Yeah, there was. You dug a hole about three foot six, something like that, or a bit more, depending what the terrain was like. The Anderson shelter itself was half round, corrugated steel. And it was held together by a steel bands and bolted. So literally, when you got to the door, 3 foot of the shelter was underneath, and you had to leap in. Well, if it had been a very rainy day, you got yourself fairly wet. But I must say, I didn't go in one once. The girls did, and Mum did, and the lady next door.
Did you cover them over?
Yes, Dad. And I covered ours over, and we bricked the front and turned it into a Snow White and Seven Dwarfs house. We put a chimney pot on top, and somewhere in the family there's a picture of it.
How deep would the covering be?
Our covering, I suppose, was all the earth taken out of the excavation, plus anything Dad could find. So I reckon it was about probably a foot, 14 inches, something like that.
So it wouldn't do much against a direct hit, but it would stop?
It would stop the blast, and probably stop you getting buried too, because when we were bombed out twice.
Oh, I'll come on to that. Now, what about the other preparations? The issue of gas masks, I think, to all schools. Oh, that happened before the war started. Do you remember
Dad,
that?
Yes. Dad doing war work, as it were, before the war started. And the place where they issued the gas masks was facing where we lived. It was just across the road. And we saw all the equipment going in, and that's where we had to go and collect our gas masks. So we were quite close. And I think my youngest brother, and he didn't like it. He didn't like the feel on his face, and neither did I. I was very, very reluctant to wear anything like that.
Why didn't you like it?
Well, it was just the smell. There's a sort of very clinical smell, a rubbery clinical smell. Plus, it was made you perspire, and it wasn't very comfortable at all.
Could you breathe all right in it? I mean,
yes.
Did you feel short of breath?
No, I think it was good for breathing, yeah.
What about blackout? Did you do any blackout preparations before the war started, or was that later?
I think we did once again, Dad. Working in that field, it was easier for us to black out.
How did you actually do it? Because there's lots of different ways of doing it. Which way did you for your family use?
I think it was linen. I'm not certain. I think it was linen, more or less drawing pinned to the windows, and
dyed black.
Yeah, and the windows were covered with tape. And at the bottom of the, I can remember a broom handle that we could roll the thing up with, you know, pull it down. And also we had a basement which Dad shored up with 4x2 timbers and put planks across, so we had there to go as well, as well as a shelter.
Which would you but yeah. Now, what about anything else before the war broke out?
No, it was just it was a feeling of, you know, something momentous was going to happen, and most people started talking about the First World War. Mum was dreadfully sad because she'd lost her father in the First World War. And I was thinking, she was probably thinking of Dad going away and probably me if it lasted too long.
Do you remember the day that war broke out? It's the old question, but the 3rd of September?
Yeah, I can.
What happened?
Well, you know, outside schools they had railings that stopped children running into the road. And there was a whole gang of us, about six of us, sitting on these, and we were talking what was going to happen when the Germans, the paratroopers was what we were talking about mostly.
You weren't actually in school, so it was a Sunday, wasn't it?
Well, during after school, because we used the school playground as for playing football and everything. It was so close to us, it was right opposite. That was in 57 Morpeth Street, Bethnal Green.
So you were talking about paratroopers?
Yeah, mainly, you know, what we were going to do to them. we'd heard so much what was going on in Czechoslovakia, Poland, I suppose, and all this place, that we got vivid imaginations for what we were going to do. And all the elder, like my dad, who'd been in the First World War, and we heard them talking, of course, we was elaborating on their conversation. But I can remember there was the railway sidings. We lived right next door to railway sidings as well. There was an arch going across the road, brick arch, and everything being very dim and glum, and us kids sitting on this fence thing, discussing what we were going to do and when we were going to join up and all the rest of it. Yeah, I can remember. I can remember aunts and uncles flying to each other's houses, making arrangements to be together if we possibly could, if and when the raid started. That was the serious side of it. Who was going with who and so on and so forth.
Now, you didn't go back to school, did you?
No, they stopped my school, and I suppose I was about 13 and a half, a bit younger or something like that. So I found myself a job.
Now, what was your first job?
Well, it was in a very old company called Tilly Carr & Co., which they blended coffees and teas, and they'd done provisions like tin milk and that sort of provisions. It was a very, very old-fashioned place. It was all oak timbers and...
Whereabouts was it?
It was in just off of Bryant & May's factory in Poplar.
Bryant & May's the match?
Match people, yes. But I can't remember the name of the road, but it's just...
What was it like, a typical day's work at the coffee and provision shop?
The thing is that one finished up with about an eighth of an inch of brown dust and powder all over. I mean, there was no thought them days of getting cancer and things. I mean, these machines would be pumping away like mad.
The coffee machines?
Coffee machines.
Grinding?
And the big hopper head that we put all the different blends of tea into. When that started to chop everything up, this terrific amount of brown dust came over, and everything was covered about an inch with brown dust. Most of the coffees, my first job was grinding them by hand, and it was very hard work. 8 hours now turning this big coffee machine by hand, and it was a wonderful, wonderful smell, gorgeous smell.
Did you drink coffee yourself? Because coffee wasn't...
Oh, no, that was only for rich people. I mean, only people of upper class. My first cup of coffee was at my very Edwardian aunt, and asked me whether I'd like coffee or tea. I was nearly sick when I first had it. I must have been about 7 years of age, you know.
So it was a very uncommon drink.
Very uncommon, yes.
And it sold tea and provisions as well?
Yes, provisions and all sorts of things. The thing I can remember mostly was these little bottles of stuff that you could put in cakes, vanilla and all that sort of stuff. They had boxes upon boxes of these, and one always wanted to take one home. Wonder what they were.
Now, how long were you there for?
Well, about 6 or 7 months. It got bombed on the first raid. On the first raid on London, it got
in September 1940.
And this would have been in about September 40. Yeah. So I can remember.
You were there almost a year then.
Nearly a year.
Now, during the phony war, we'll come back to the raid. Were you very aware of the phony war? I mean, did you take an interest? You were just about the right age to take an interest
in what... Really, because, you see, by then I started earning some money. Things at home was better. Dad had a permanent job. Mum did. I was at work. My sister was at work. So we used to go to places and camp out for the weekend, like Epping Forest, you know, which we used to walk there to save the fares. But only it was about 7 or 8 miles. And... Well, all my family said that after the war, they would buy houses there, and that every one of them had I'm the only one that's living over here. But yeah, we used to go camping over the weekends, and there's still the football in Portland Place we used to use. So it was...
You didn't really follow the war much then?
Not really. We listened to the news because Dad had it on a blue ribbon radio that he'd made himself. And it ran on a flat battery and an accumulator, and unfortunately caught fire on one occasion.
What did you think of the radio reports? Because it was all a bit new then, wasn't it?
Well...
It'd be the BBC, wouldn't it?
It would, yes, it was. Yeah.
Sorry.
We took everything as read. We didn't know about propaganda or things like that. If we were told something, we believed it. We never thought of questioning it anyway. I just heard these things were happening, and we couldn't tell any lies. It wasn't British, was it, really? But we heard all sorts of things, obviously. Especially on the approaches to Dunkirk, that they got even more. They started to come back. I had three uncles in France at the time, two regular soldiers and one territorial army. And when they got around that area, they started to get that and the air raids, of course.
That started a bit later.
I can remember.
Did you think of joining? I mean, both in 19 in June, things like the LDV, Home Guard.
Yes, I joined the Home Guard. Yes, I was in the Home Guard until I was in the Navy.
So that was before the raid started. You were already in.
Yeah.
What? How did you join the Home? Was it the LDV when you joined it? Or?
Well, I wanted a uniform, to be honest. It was the thing. I wanted to join up in the army. I was obviously too young, although I'd made. Inquiries about getting into boy service in the Navy. They told me to come back in a couple of years or something like that.
Why the Navy?
Well, I'd always liked the Navy. My uncle was a full-time sailor. Dad wasn't very keen on it because he was a soldier, but I just love the sea. I really do. As a matter of fact, I've got a bottle of seawater over there. It's a treasure of mine. Every time they come, people go to the seaside. When they come back, they fetch me some seawater. It's a little thing that's happened to me.
Now, what about this joining? You didn't join the air raid precautions people.
Well, they asked me to do fire washing, which on top of a big building called Mallison's Aeronautical Firewood.
Now, which came first, the Home Guard or that?
The ARP came first.
Well, tell me about that. So it was.
Well, we had to do one or two nights a week. I can't remember now. Which was in this about six-storey factory that made plywood.
And what was its name again?
Aeronautical Panel Plywood Company. It was known after the war as Mallinson's.
And what training did you have before you did this fire watching?
None at all. We were just given a stirrup pump and not even a tin hat or anything. And I can remember my first night of fire watching, we had a crane on the roof, which swung around picking up the loads to go onto the floor, and the wire of the crane jumped off the wheel at the end of the crane and in between the spokes. And an old ex-ship's engineer and myself had to go up, and this crane was overhanging six floors, trying to get this hawser back onto the pulley. That's how it could work next morning. So I wasn't too pleased, and he wouldn't let me wear a safety belt. When we got back down, I asked him why this was, and he said, well, you see, if you wear a safety belt, you'll always rely on it. And one of these days, you're going to lean back, and you won't have it buckled up. So that's why I wouldn't let him. His name was Mr. Green. He was the next ship's engineer. That was my first introduction to air raid precautions.
And were you actually in the ARP, or just sort of just volunteering for fireworks?
Well, we were attached to their own local factory force, who would help out on the main ARP organisation.
What about this joining the Home Guard?
Well, I decided we didn't get a uniform with the ARP, so I decided to go down the local Home Guard, Civil Defence, what they called it in those days, I can't remember.
Local Defence Volunteers?
Yes, LDV, that's it.
Was it that when you joined it?
I think it was, yeah.
And where did you go to join? And
the Milam Road, Stepney. There was a Territorial Army place there, and that was the headquarters for the local LDV.
Do you know the name of the drill hall?
I don't think it had. I can't remember it having a name.
Marlin Drill Hall or
something. It was something along them lines, yes. And
How did they sign you up for it?
Well, it was very, very the funniest time I've ever had in my life, and the best joke I've ever had in my life was joining because they decided to give me a uniform, and there was all ex First World War men there, and whiskers and moustaches, and they knew all the trips and let their ribbons up and so on. And I was this baby, I forget what age I was, we were going to join them. One very, very interesting comment on that, we were given, after some time, we were given this thing called a spigot mortar. And the idea was it's like a stove pipe, and you slid this bomb down and pulled the trigger, pulled the lanyard, and it shot this mortar bomb up the road a bit. Well, we took it to Rainer in Essex to test it, and we pulled the lanyard and it didn't go off. So we all walked away some distance and we had a conversation, all these First World War men and this little boy, and they agreed, because I was youngest and could run fastest, it was me who had to go and pull the lanyard. Again, you see, and they said, well, if you go and pull the lanyard, we'll make you up to a lance corporal. So I did, but what I forgot to do, I walked over to the lanyard, give it a good yank. What I forgot to do was to look up the range to see where the body was on it. And unfortunately for me, there was three officers walking across the range. They suddenly saw this mortar bomb coming towards them. They did a very hasty retreat. Well, that's a true story. And, I wasn't very welcome, but... When I got back, I told Mum what was going to happen. They were going to make me a lance corporal because I did this thing, pulled the lanyard. And she went to the drill hall and she got hold of the major and she gave him the biggest ration you could imagine. But that was my introduction to the...
Were you ever made a lance corporal?
No. I was given all the worst drills ever. And we used to...
Can you tell us about the first uniform, though, about that, though?
Yes, it was too long in the arms and too broad in the shoulders and... It fitted me like a sack of coal, sort of thing. But after a few alterations, it wasn't too bad. It was very rough, and I remember it had a peculiar damp wool smell to it all the time. And I got the same thing in the Navy, too. This thing about damp wool. And we were given two places to guard, the York Hall, the baths in Bethnal Green, and...
The what?
York Hall.
What's that?
It's a swim bath plus laundry for local laundry, and they hold boxing tournaments there now.
So why did you have to guard that?
Well, I really never found out, except everybody seemed to go to sleep and I was standing outside all the time. But and we also, the college at Tredegar Square, we guarded that too, but... we had to be a bit more careful there. A friend of mine nearly shot me. He challenged somebody at the other side of the building and got no answer, and he pulled the trigger. And the bullet, I think, bounced off a few gravestones before it came along to me.
And what would a training like with them?
Training was pretty good. Well, these old soldiers, for all their... bragging and boasting and so on and so forth. They were pretty smart where it came to, well, I thought they were anyway, where it came to training and to arms drill especially. The only thing I didn't like was to choose the NCOs. They made you go up in front and start yelling orders. Well, I was not very forthcoming where that's concerned. They could yell at me, but I couldn't yell back at them. After all, they were father figures. Rather... inhibited anything I wanted to do. But I found that, and we also used to go on manoeuvres. We went on manoeuvres with the Green Howards. And once again, my mother and father objected because I was supposed to be a sniper. And the Green Howards were advancing up Tollett Street in Bethnal Green.
It was street fighting manoeuvres?
Street fighting, yes. And they placed me on the roof of a partly bombed out house as a sniper. And unfortunately, it was near where we lived. So Mum saw me out the window and came dashing round again to remonstrate with the, I think it was a sergeant or somebody anyway.
And what training did you get in weapons training? Starting with the rifle, because if you're a sniper, how did they get you to that stage?
Well, I don't know why, but I was a fairly good shot. I started off with 303. My first shot, I nearly broke my jaw. I didn't tuck it in well enough. And then we proceeded from that to throwing grenades. This was all done at Raynham in Essex. After that, it was virtually we were trained for... Oh, well, we dug slit trenches in Hackney Marshes, and we all was allocated which one we'd have to go to.
Well, tell me about them, then.
Well, Hackney Marshes got a canal and running right across it. There's motorways, I believe, there now. And there's huge marshy fields where the lads used to play football. And we use that to dig trenches right in the middle to stop parachutists from landing, and also along the banks of the river, and instructions to blow the breach if they did land and we had to retreat. That was basically the idea of what we had to do. Following on that for a little while, I was transferred to the gun site in Victoria Park.
As what?
Anti-aircraft. Well, as a runner, actually. There was ATS girls there, and it was those rocket guns that caused that accident at Bethnal Green Tube Station, where all them people got killed.
Tell me about, so what sort of guns were they?
They originally, I think they were .3s, or, no, 3-inch. Sorry, I think that's what they were, but don't hold me to that, I can't really remember. And they changed them to these rocket-firing guns later on in. And
while you were there, no?
No, I didn't see them change.
So they were still probably 3.7s?
Something like that, yes, I can't remember.
And what were your duties as a runner?
Well, I don't really know. If I was given anything, all I seemed to be doing was running from one hole to another one, giving them to these ATS girls, and they had a radio. Whether they used it or not, I don't know. But they made my life a misery being a little boy. But that was on the furthest side of Victoria Park.
Now, what about the effects of the bombing? When it started in earnest in September, didn't it? You were bombed out to various places. What do you remember of the first raid?
Well, I didn't seem to take that much notice. The girls and the women went down into the shelters, and it was pretty packed down there. Must have been claustrophobic in those days. I sat in the kitchen with an uncle. While the race were on, and we're quite close to Docklands and the railway yard, so it was pretty heavily bombed in that area.
Was there much damage in your area in Bethnal Green?
Well, in Stepney, we moved to Stepney.
So Bethnal Green and Stepney, yeah. What about the Stepney?
Yeah, there was a lot of damage. Complete streets would be knocked down.